Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 395 for comics originally released on March 4th, 2015. Now, starting us off in DC is Swamp Thing number 40. The solicitation blurb, or at least what I was able to find, and I had to use a different method than usual, is that this issue's cover is presented in a special sideways format, which I thought was really revealing about the story in here, which means you tilt the thing 90 degrees and you see the cover. It's a nice cover. This is by Charles Soule. Artist is Jesus Saiz, or Jesus Saiz. I mispronounced the first name this time. Go figure. Have you, Drew, been reading Swamp Thing continuously, on and off, not at all? Where are you at on this?
On and off. Started it, dropped it. We reviewed it a couple times. I stuck with it for an issue or two after, lost interest. And so that's where I'm at. Yeah, on and off.
This was one when it started, particularly with the whole Rot World thing that went like 18 months.
Yeah.
That just lasted too long. It didn't start the book off on a good footing or whatever for me. It's like, move on already. But I've really been enjoying the Swamp Thing title since Charles Soule took it over a while back. And this issue, first off, is the last issue of the series. This is not one of the ones coming back after the Convergence event, unfortunately.
Yeah, it felt like a final issue.
It did, very much so. And there were parts of the story that felt a little rushed, but it wasn't in the typical final issue of kind of only tell the highlights sort of a thing, but just that there was a lot covered in this. It felt to me like Charles Soule originally expected the title to keep going for at least another 10 issues or something, if not much, much longer, and had enough story to fill out at least the rest of the year. And I think it would have been a really fun read if he'd been able to do that. But this was the final issue. He did, I think, an amazing job finishing off and fully telling the story he set out to tell. There were a few places where things progressed kind of quickly, again, a little rushed here, but it's not like James Robinson's final issue of Justice League, or JLA, whichever title it was at the time, where it was, here's a page for each of the issues I didn't get to tell. I felt like we still got a full story here, well presented. What were your thoughts?
I thought it was a little confusing in the beginning. It took me a little while to get back up to speed with what was going on. And I was surprised that some of the things that I had left several issues ago were actually still continuing, still the same storyline. Once I kind of figured out what was happening, I thought the art was really nice. The story got where it needed to go eventually. I thought it was okay. I didn't enjoy it that much, but it could be because I've taken a step away for a while, so that probably didn't help.
Well, it was certainly the culmination of the storyline, and I think if you'd missed the last couple of installments and what had been going on with the other parliaments, I could see where this would be hard to get into and therefore hard for it to really resonate with you.
Yeah, it's probably some of those characters that I was like, oh no, wait a minute, who's he? Should I remember him from early on in the series or later on in the series? And so that's my own fault for not being on the book. And but as it progressed, you're like, oh, this is really building towards the end. And yeah, it felt a very strong sense of finality when you close the book and you can put it on the shelf and we'll see what when it comes back.
Yeah, this is one that, as far as ending a story and a run of a volume in a satisfying way, Soule did it hands down. No questions about that for me. And I applaud the, again, trying to tell all of the story he had, even though he only had a finite page count here versus... There were a couple of things where there was a particular panel where, like, the demon shows up. And I'm like, you know, that right there, that would have been at least a full couple of page scene, if not a full issue, potentially, of, you know, Swamp Thing saying, hey, you know, there was this promise, you did this, and, you know, or whatever, and really fleshing that out. As it was, the essential parts of the story got told in an entertaining way, but, you know, I'm thinking there's an alternate reality where this actually went through another, you know, dozen issues or something and played out a bit slower, and maybe it would have been better. Maybe this was the way to go. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that he had big plans for the book world version of Swamp Thing. That could have maybe been multiple issues of him living in that world and exploring that world or something.
I think that would have been a full issue, and I kind of put that as his Morrison moment, if you will, because it was very metatextual. It was a new sort of an elemental force. It was a really cool idea that didn't... not that it didn't get enough space, but it certainly warranted getting more space.
Yeah.
And I think it was... I won't say the highlight of the issue, because I think the entire issue was really strong, but that's where I think if he'd had more issues to play this out over, that really could have helped solidify Charles Soule's reputation as a writer even more than, you know, his current work already has.
Well, the Machine Queen has been around for a while, right? I mean, I remember the last, wasn't that world or that avatar touched upon the last time we reviewed?
I forget the last time we reviewed Swamp Thing. When was that?
Might have been like 28, maybe?
Yeah, and, possibly that long.
And so, you know, that nemesis has been around for a long time, and the battle was over in a couple pages, and it was just like, oh, okay, well, we went all this way, and then boom, 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 we're done. Okay. Well, I mean, it's partly not his fault because he has to button it up, but it just felt like we've spent an awful lot of time with this character for it to just be lickety-split and it's over.
Well, I think that was sort of a no-win situation for Charles Soule, in so much as he either cuts out parts of the story or tells pretty much the game plan he had, just does it faster. And there were certain things here, I think if they'd been cut, I wouldn't have missed them, because I wouldn't have known they were there and cut, or weren't there and had been cut, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But, again, I think the way this played out, by and large, worked. It was good, but frustrating in so much as it was clear to me that this could have been, again, multiple times the number of pages over time, and there was enough material to fill it. This is compressed storytelling, but in a good way. But again, if you had been out of the story for a bit and are using this to get back in, one, it's a final issue. You're hitting the climax of the story and stuff. They didn't have the time here, or really the impetus to bring new readers up to speed fully.
No, that's true. And all that being said, I don't know how engaging. Well, this book is not engaging to me, and it hasn't been the last couple of times I've tried it, and so it hasn't really changed that much. There was some fun stuff here because of it being the final issue. They were able to put pins on things and in storylines, which is always fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that part, I like that stuff. But all in all, I still think it's the same book. That's this slightly above average, so it's a C+.
Interesting. And I can understand where you're coming from with the character and the title just not really clicking with you, because I've got I've been reading Swamp Thing since, I know my collection goes back to Crisis on Infinite Earths. I don't think I've been reading it continually. I think I went back and filled the earlier stuff in as back issues, but I've been reading it for ages, and I think I sat out a volume or two. Because it's one of those that sometimes the character clicks with me, other times it just doesn't. And there's nothing right, wrong, or indifferent. It comes down to you know, what are your tastes in comics and stuff. For me, since Soule took it over, he's been playing around with the elemental aspects and all of that in a way that works for me. And I've really enjoyed what's going on. I think it's been one of the stronger books over at DC. So for me, this was very solid A rating and stuff. Like I said, it felt a little rushed in places. I wanted a little bit more out of it here and there, but it came down to the series was ending. You know, he didn't have more pages. That's not his fault. And,
right.
You know, it's frustrating, but not something I'm taking points off for. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was really pleased with his run on the book, and I really appreciated him not cutting corners or giving just a perfunctory ending, but playing out the full story, even if, yes, this person that should have been a major threat or whatever, wow, that was dealt with quickly, so they could go on and deal with other things quickly, right. You know? So, I really enjoyed it. Very strong, solid A rating.
Think when it comes back, it'll come back as a Vertigo book?
I don't know, because Constantine the Hellblazer's coming back, and they're getting rid of the New 52 with this whole, it's all just DC Comics sort of a thing. And I was reading on Comic Book Resources, an interview with Jim Lee and Dan Didio, where they're trying to, instead of doing different genres, same basic flavor though, same genre, different flavors. And I wasn't really sure how to interpret that comment of, obviously what they're coming out with after Convergence has some really different styles, tones, and feels to it. So I think we're going to get some books that are darker in tone, more Vertigo-ish, or more classic Vertigo, and certainly this would be a property well worth doing that, just like Constantine. But I don't know that they will be Vertigo books in terms of literally the Vertigo imprint.
Oh, wait. I didn't look that closely. There's still a Vertigo line.
Yes.
Okay. I thought there was still going to be a Vertigo line.
Well, there still has been. I mean, that's where Fables is. That's where...
Right. But I'm talking about post-Convergence.
As far as I know, Vertigo will still continue to exist.
Yeah, okay.
But I am unclear as to how they're doing some of the branding. And I'm also a little... skeptical's not the right word. Cautious, let's go with that. I was going to say cautiously optimistic, but I'm not optimistic about this. They're playing down the whole concept of continuity in favor of quote-unquote canon. The stories that matter will rise to the top, and the rest, who cares? And
Mayo cares.
Yes, damn straight. Well, I mean, canon is continuity. And I can see where they feel the fans are harping a little too much on the continuity, but I think the direction they're heading post-Convergence is similar to what Marvel did a number of years ago, where it's, it doesn't matter if this Wolverine's from the Ultimate Universe, the regular one. It's a Wolverine story. It's a good story. That's what matters. And it just muddies the waters, and long-term doesn't work. They may tell great stories, but then it's, is this in continuity? Is it not? And you wind up with such a confused backstory or unclear backstories, even for the creators themselves on major characters, that, you know, it's hard to write that train again once you get off that. So, and some people don't care about continuity, that's fine. But if you don't care about continuity, it means the history of the characters doesn't matter, at which point, why are you reading any of the stories, since that's just going to be the history of the characters?
Well, it seems to me, and we'll probably know more, maybe the next previews catalog that comes out, but it seems to me that those core 30 titles or so are going to continue to be steeped in continuity. And then it's those new 24 where they're going to play a little bit more, right?
I'm not sure. I think it's opened up the doors. I think it may be creative team by creative team, editorial team by editorial team. It opens the doors to people saying, well, it's a little fast and loose with continuity. Who cares? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think using continuity as a crutch or as an obstacle is a problem. If there was something stupid done in the past, ignore it, sweep it under the rug, and be low-key about that. I'm all for that. But if it comes down to I'm reading a book and I'm getting pulled out of the story because I don't think you know who these characters are, that's, for me, where continuity becomes a problem.
Well, how do you justify that with being able to enjoy Injustice?
They're not saying Injustice is part of the New 52. It's okay. An alternate take. It's an Elseworlds story. It's a parallel world.
Okay.
And I've got no problem with that. It does, however, get a little confusing when I'm reading so many different versions of the same characters. We've talked about this a couple of times. The different versions of Dick Grayson running around. The Earth 2 version, the Injustice version, the version in Grayson. I'm thinking there's maybe even one or two others that are floating about right now. It does get confusing.
But if they can tell these stories, but they need to tell them with a disclaimer saying this is not part of the DC universe.
But just like they did originally with Dark Knight. Now, their point in this interview was that Dark Knight was so groundbreaking, so brilliant, that writers kept kind of pulling aspects of it into continuity. That's cool. I have no problem with that. But it was originally set outside. Same with The Killing Joke for the most part. Although you could argue that one either way, I guess. Things don't have to be part of continuity, but make it clear whether they are or not.
Okay.
But that's just my two cents. At some point, we may have a bigger discussion on continuity, because I think it's important, misunderstood, and obviously a lot of people have very different and very valid different opinions on it.
Well, it definitely matters.
To some people more than others. And, you know, sitcoms are a prime example of you've got some continuity in some of them, others you could shuffle the episodes and you'd be none the wiser. But the nature of stories is there is some semblance of continuity, some semblance of history, some semblance of progression, even if it's minor. And even if the characters don't mentally progress, they do the same stupid stuff, sitcom after episode after episode after episode for years on end, they at least have some semblance of before and after. Even something like The Simpsons, which is probably the best TV example of, you know, 25 years of stories having been told with the characters never really aging at all. There's still a sense of before and after and characters coming back, which is continuity.
That's true.
So it doesn't have to be a hindrance. All of that having been said, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes.
This is all new Hawkeye number one.
And wasn't the last issue of the last volume so very... Oh, wait, it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, so. I was hoping the previous series will end before too much longer. I'm curious how many issues this will get out before that other one finishes.
And how many issues into this volume before they start the next volume?
And will the previous one have finished at that point?
Well, they have three concurrent volumes. That would be a record.
They could. There's enough Hawkeyes. I honestly don't know why they felt they needed to start this one before finishing the other one. There is a part of me that thinks, you know, the other one is had problems, maybe it's late, you know, whatever, fine. Finish it, then start this one, even the week after that. But going overlapping, it rubs me the wrong way. It's like they don't want to take ownership of the problems, production problems that the book has had. Creatively, it's been pretty good, but, you know, hey.
Is it possible that they have no date when that's going to come out? And they assumed when they solicited this that that last volume would have been long finished by now? I mean, I know we did.
I don't know if I would say long finished by now.
But at least finish.
At least shipped this week, I would hope. I don't know. I get why they want to get this out, earn some more money with the character, whatever. I was going to say I don't fault them for that, but clearly I do. I already have. I've said that. I get it. But again, there's a certain amount of just take ownership and responsibility and be accountable for the other one not having finished. And yeah, it's just,
I need to look up the, we're on 22 issues of the last volume. From issue one to now, how many months is that? How many issues should that be? Just to see how much money Marvel has left on the table by just waiting, because it could be significant. I would guess it's at least 6 to 10 issues that didn't happen because they didn't come out on a monthly basis.
That's an excellent question, actually. When did the previous issue come out? I'd have to do a little digging around.
Yeah, I'd have to look that up and just to see, you know, issue one launched here. We were trucking along to issue 11 and then we hit some kind of wall. And just how many issues didn't make it. And therefore, that's $4 that didn't get earned per reader. And for, you know, you multiply that over those months. It's a significant sum of money.
It is. And that other one had issues coming out of order, issues delayed, which is a shame because it was a really good series. And this is a little bit of an odd duck to replace it.
Yeah.
Because that other one was focusing on kind of what Hawkeye did when he wasn't being an Avenger. This seems to be focusing on what the Hawkeyes do while they're being superheroic. And again, nothing right or wrong about that. It's just different feel, entirely.
Well, I wonder how much more we continue to get the flashback stuff throughout this series, or is this just for the initial, arc or initial couple of issues to flesh out what makes, Clint the way he is, maybe? I'm not sure if it seems like a very unique style that the flashbacks are told in visually.
Yes, and so one that I didn't particularly care for.
It was kind of murky. Didn't care for it much either. But it seems very deliberate and planned, almost as a this is the storytelling palette we'll use for our flashbacks going forward, and they'll always be a significant part of the books. And if so, I don't know if I like that.
I felt that the flashbacks were disconnected to this issue for the most part. It worked poorly for me in so much as at the end of the beginning of the flashback, there was a little bit of a allusion to Clint not being able to hear well, which foreshadows his later hearing loss. And when last I read Hawkeye in his own book, which is the other concurrent series that we've mentioned and ridiculed a few times, for the lateness. It's still a good book. They've gone overboard with him blatantly having to read lips. And visually, the way they have depicted that, brilliant. Don't get me wrong. Here, he is listening to the Kate Bishop Hawkeye behind him. And I'm like, well, wait a sec. After all the heavy-handed, you know, he's deaf. He's reading lips in the previous, or in the other series. I keep saying previous, concurrent. Having him hearing somebody behind him, not looking at them, seemed a bit odd. Now, again, particularly after that flashback alluding to the hearing loss, they do mention him having new hearing aids, magically fixing the problem.
But did that happen somewhere else in an Avengers book or something that I don't know about?
Which? The hearing aids?
The Stark hearing aids or whatever.
They happened, as far as I know, in this issue.
Just in the allude that...
Just had. In that comment of, oh yeah, Stark gave me new hearing aids, kind of, I forget the exact quote.
So, obviously, Jeff Lemire doesn't want to deal with the hearing loss as a story element, so we're getting rid of it. Okay, that makes sense.
As has been the case before, as has been the case with his blindness, his being crippled at 1 point, or 2 points, again... Certain parts of continuity I get wanting to sweep under the rug. But you should also have editors not letting those happen to begin with, or playing them in a way that doesn't make this look like a bit of a cop-out. And in answer to your previous question, the previous volume, I believe, started in on August 1st, 2012. So they've missed some issues.
So yeah, so in August of 2014, there should have been 23 or 24 issues, and we haven't hit that yet. So they're a solid, you know, a solid, like I said, 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
6 to 10 months behind, and that is 40,000 copies a month times $4 times 8 months. If it's just 8 months, we'll say that's a lot of money. I don't blame them. Put out another volume so you can capture the Hawkeye crowd and get their money.
Yeah. And again, it makes sense. It's just frustrating. Again, not wanting to deal with certain things. I get it. I liked this issue, not the flashback part, but the main part of it. It was fun. It was good. It was a good use of the Kate Bishop and the Clint Barton Hawkeyes. Having Barney in the flashbacks implies he's going to be coming back. I'm a little confused, I don't know. I have mixed feelings and opinions, how about that, for the tone and direction of this style. The editor, Sana Amanat, and I apologize for mispronouncing the name, she's also editing Ms. Marvel, which has been very highly regarded, and doing a number of things. One of, I think, the stronger editors that Marvel has, actually, has a thing on the letter page, kind of, you know, here's what we're doing with this. And they mention that this series is about Hawkeye, both Clint, Kate, and Barney, and what it represents to carry that legacy, the legacy of Hawkeye. And I'm like, you know, legacy in comics, I think, is a fun thing to play with. Anyone who's ever read the Superman Batman generation stuff that John Byrne did, I mean, that was the Superman Batman legacies over decades, centuries even, in some cases. Brilliant, a lot of fun. Again, legacy with heroes has a lot of story juice to it. But the legacy of Hawkeye, that really surprises me, because most of the other Hawkeyes have only been around for maybe a couple of years of story time as Hawkeye. Some of them been around a lot longer in the stories, but really only about a decade or so of real time. Kate Bishop was introduced in 2005. Bullseye became Hawkeye in Dark Avengers around, I think, 2009. Barney, Clint's brother, became Hawkeye in, again, Dark Avengers around 2012. So the concept of legacy for Hawkeye, and it's not like the legacy's been handed down. The name's been swiped by a couple of people. You know, it just, it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't compute. It feels, I don't say wrong, but off, or like a misinterpretation of the concept of legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And another thing kind of that threw me a little bit was, they were talking about this being an all-Canadian team that's working on this book. And I was thinking back to this last volume, and for all its faults, and we kid because we love, on the last volume of Hawkeye, but it was a very American book. It had a very American feel. Part of, you know, New York just kind of bled off the page, and that, you know, the apartment building, it was its own character, was just the setting of that book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very American, and because of that. So I'm anxious to see what, you know, if there's a definite departure from that, feeling it with this new creator take on this. So already I've kind of seen that there is. It's not going to be rooted in a place. It's not going to have that connection like we had. And that was part of the appeal for me in the last volume, was that connection to place and those having their own characters and that the setting being so important to the book.
Well, it grounded the characters.
Yeah.
It made really them did. People, not just superheroes. And this issue so blatantly deals with the super heroic aspects of the Hawkeyes versus the what they do the rest of the time that the other series has. So again, fundamentally different tone, style, and nature. Whether the all-Canadian creative team, what influence that has, I have no idea. I'm curious to see if that'll be very pronounced or not. But I agree that the nature of the setting and tone and style of the previous volume, again, concurrently still waiting to end, I think that was a strength of that book. It made it unique. This is just, you know, another random, you know, Avengers title almost at this point.
And just for a point of clarification, the final panel is the flipped upside down flashback shot of the brothers linked to the modern day reveal of what was behind the Project Communion door. Is there a connection there that I'm supposed to put together, or is it just a weird way to present that?
I'm going to go with just a weird way to present that. There are a few things around those last couple of pages where I couldn't tell if they were trying to parallel the current day with the flashback or not, or if they were just trying to bring the A plot and the B plot together.
Yeah,
or,
and if that's the case,
or if they somehow merged.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was more than these plots are coming together and blending on the same page even. And
I didn't read it that way, but I'm not going to say I read it correctly. I'm going to say that the artistic interpretation, the art leaves a lot of interpretation to be had.
Yeah.
In other words, I sure as hell don't know. For me, though, the flashback stuff, I was more or less just ignoring. I was reading it. It's like, yeah, it wasn't adding anything to me. I like the current day stuff better.
And we get a lot of that sort of how this character's childhood was so bad, and that's what made them this person. And we get it so often in creator-owned stuff. A couple of the Image books that I'm reading right now are, you know, beat that point home recently. And so we're seeing that story trope over and over and over again. So maybe that doesn't work as well as it could, because I see it so often and so recently, or it just wasn't really that well done. Could be any of those things.
I think it's a little of both. It's overused in general, and I don't think it's going to make us like the character any more or less to a degree of the Clint Barton Hawkeye. Either you like him or you don't to get the book. It seemed cliche, but it was a good way to get Barney in there without getting Barney in there. So
yeah. Yeah, all in all, though, you know, brought some a cast of characters together. We saw them interact a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It was an okay start, and therefore it's an okay grade, so it's a C.
I can see that. I was going to give it a B, but the more I think about it, I can't justify that. There was so much of the issue that was the flashback that just didn't work for me, and it felt like this thing was struggling to, in the story, find its tone, its style. The whole legacy of Hawkeye stuff didn't come out in the story, stuff like that. I'm going to go with a C+. I think it's a little bit better than average. I think it's got promise. I don't think that promise really showed up on the page, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think this team, particularly in comparison to the brilliance of the other Hawkeye series, they didn't bring their A game to this, and they need to. And I look forward to the title improving over time, because I think it will. It's a strong creative team. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah, you know, let's look at some more Jeff Lemire.
That's right. Totally different creator. This is Jeff Lemire, who's known for his Jeff Lemire work, unlike his Jeff Lemire work on Hawkeye. I didn't mention the creators on Hawkeye. It was Jeff Lemire and Raymond Perez, my mistake. This is Jeff Lemire with Dustin Nguyen, totally different artist. This is Descender number 1 from Image Comics. The premise here is a little hard to kind of pinpoint. Basically, we've got a future. There were androids. there was a huge, huge robot, androidish thing that attacked all the different major planets that made androids really unpopular, so they wiped them out. There's one left. They realized that this one left, which was just a companion droid, if you will, for kids, has the same basic programming root code or whatever as the big evil things that wiped out billions of people.
So, 10 years ago, right?
10 years ago. So it's not looking so good for the kid. We've got two main characters here. We've got Dr. Jin Kwan, and we've got Tim 21, the kid droid or whatever. And there's a bit of a set stuff up, jump forward, give some exposition. There was too much exposition in here. This set up the premise, the backstory. We get the world and the situation set up, and they do a fairly effective job there, but it was exposition heavy to get there. And my main frustration is, while I liked aspects of the world, I liked aspects of the characters, I didn't feel, and tell me if you feel differently on this, I didn't feel we spent enough time with either Dr. Kwan or Tim 21 to really get to know and care about them all that well. I felt, particularly with Tim 21, more time should have been spent on him and what it's like versus he's alone at a dead outpost. Okay, you spend a page of him walking around. It's empty, they're dead, I get it. Who the hell is this kid?
I thought that was the only part that worked.
Really?
I enjoyed that character a lot. I had great affection for that character. The beginning stuff, I think, would have worked better later. I think this would have been much more effective opening with the kid walking out, you know, waking up all alone with all these dead people around, because it was a great reveal. It was a great reveal when all of a sudden he starts working on his little dog. Mm-hmm. And then you see him open up because, I didn't know that part of the plot, or I had forgotten it 3 months from the solicit 3 months ago. And so I thought that was a great reveal. And then you get to see how he's really still just a boy. He's programmed as a boy, and he feels alone, and he feels sad, and he needs help. And there's some ominous stuff happening. And I didn't really need to know all this stuff before to get me in that. So this was the best part of the book, was the second half of it. And it's unfortunate that they buried it there. Because that was really is the heart of the book for me. And you could have built out from there, I think.
I think you're right. I think the 9 pages before the opening title pages, which are kind of the extra pages we got because it was about 30 pages of story, I think you're right. I think if they had left that out and you started just with, hey, we're on this moon, this kid wakes up and go from there, I agree. I think that would have been the better opening. I think that does work better. And you're right. We know more about this character, Tim 21, than to Dr. Kwan, who we mainly got in those opening 9 pages.
Which were completely riddled with exposition, like you said. It would have worked just fine, just future Doctor. You know, just let the story play out. And then if you wanted to, you could have talked about that robot uprising or invasion later. Well, to flesh out things.
They do when Tim 21 is sitting there getting the update from the computer. Here's all the news reports or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was exposition heavy, but made sense. Then we get reintroduced to Dr. Kwan, and I think that's a better introduction than the previous one. So I think you hit the nail on the head. I think they opened the story wrong.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's a much better introduction to him when he's older, grizzled, and kind of a failed doctor at that mm-hmm. point. He's a much more interesting person than the early version of himself.
Well, and it's hard to reconcile the two, because we don't know that much about the early version of him
mm-hmm.
versus the he's washed out and you know, getting a second chance almost. This was one that I liked what I got aspects of it, but I didn't love it. I think it's certainly got a lot of promise, but I didn't feel connected enough to Tim 21 or Dr. Kwan at all, certainly, to be particularly vested in finding out how the story unfolds. I'm curious, but the question is, am I curious enough to stay on with the title or not?
Is this a book that you're sampling as you won, or were you are you in for a couple of these already?
That is an excellent question. I would have to pull up what I have on order.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. Don't worry.
No,
about it.
That's
it's just a sample for me. It was just my I had just pre-ordered the first one just to see if it was for me. So that would be something I would have to go ahead and, after reading this, decide if I wanted to add issue 2 onto my next order. And that's curious because I'm close. I think I liked it a little better than you did, it sounds like.
I think you did, and I think you had, again, a better take on where they went wrong than I did.
Yeah, and I'm hoping going forward that it is a story of Tim. And, you know, and hopefully the older scientist is a hero in trying to keep him alive. He should have some connection to him since it's his creation, I would hope. And I think there's some good stuff there. And just hopefully that the exposition is out of the way now and we can just tell the story and have a heart in it, and not meander as much as we did in the beginning of this. But I thought it was pretty good and enough for me to keep reading. So I gave it a B-.
Interesting. I just can't give it that. You know, I was tempted to, but it failed to sell me. There was nothing that I felt compelling enough to really say, I must get that next issue. And it's not bad, but there's so many things fighting for my time and attention.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is one that I just pulled up what I've got on order. It is not something I've got the other issues on order. And I, let me double check. I'm going to see if I've got it on my next order, because at this point, yeah, I've got it as a maybe. Let me know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I can't justify adding this.
Right.
It's, again, not bad, but they got their shot. They had the page count. They didn't sell me on the characters. They didn't sell me on the concept. I'm willing to check this out later if people say it's worth doing so, but they need to find their way and prove themselves before I come back.
And that's the problem with creator-owned books, is there's no strong editor on these things that would see that from the beginning that, you know, obviously the creators are too close to it sometimes, and sometimes they have a laser focused vision for the story, and sometimes, you know, maybe they could take that nudge and say, what if we cut this here and put it back here? Would it really take that much away from your vision if we started the story a little stronger? You know, there's nobody to tell them that. And I think that's when it was a strong editor. That's the benefit of a strong editor.
I agree. I think this book, and I just checked, it did not have an editor listed. I think it would benefit any book, not just any book, would benefit from having an interested third party who's not aware of the story, who's not vested in the story, who's not getting a piece of the pie or whatever of it going out the door or whatever, but can give an honest appraisal. Is this accessible? Is it missing something? Could it be a little tighter? Or, you know, here are other ways you could do something to think about. You know, what about this? What about that? Not to say that the creators need to really do anything with all of that, but they should at least solicit that. And from a few different places, and if there's common stuff, gosh, you know, that opening stuff didn't sell it, or hey, if you go about it this way, it might work better. I think any creative work can be improved on, whether every creative work needs to be improved on is another matter, but creators that don't take advantage of having an editor, I think, are missing a major opportunity there. This is something that I think with somebody outside giving them a little guidance, again, like your suggestion, just hey, whack or change, or take the pages, the 9 pages at the beginning, put them maybe at the end or later on or as a flashback or something. They could have used those pages much better elsewhere and started the story stronger. That kind of advice is what this book needed, or at least for me would have benefited from.
Mm-hmm. I think would have helped the story a little bit.
You know, I've seen a number of books over the years, over the decades, where it was so close to a home run, but it was either a foul ball or a swing and a miss or something. It's just they didn't connect quite right, and with a little bit of coaching or whatever they could have, and that's frustrating. One of the other books I read this week that I want to mention along those same lines, did you read Con Job?
No.
Or Gray and Palmieri, or hang on, let me pull it up. It was, first off, this is a book that I got under the name Con Job. It's actually come out under the name, depending how you read it, Palmiotti and Brady's The Big Con Job, which gives it a bit of an identity crisis. Is it con job? Is it big con job? Where do you look for it on the rack? That sort of a thing. And Palmiotti and Brady's The Big Con Job is the full title, actually. This is the one where you've got has-been stars who show up at all the conventions, and the basic premise is they're going to go rip off San Diego Comic-Con.
Oh, okay.
And what happens in this issue is we find out there are a bunch of has-been stars, and they're going to go rip off San Diego Comic-Con. It did nothing but introduce the characters and establish the premise. I knew that from the solicit. It did it decently. I like the characters. I think the art could have been a little cleaner here or whatever, but it's a four-issue miniseries, and the first one of the four, I would argue, you could skip if you had read the solicitation and advanced information on the book. You'd know who the characters are. You'd know what the premise is. You could just start with the second issue. And it's not a bad first issue. It's actually a decent one. It just covered ground that I don't want to say you could take for granted knowing the premise, but they spent more time on it and didn't move the story far enough. Mm-hmm. And again, that's one where I don't know if these guys had an editor. I don't see one. No, they do have one. Daphna Pleblin and assistant editor Mary Gumport. So they had editors over at Boom. This is something that, were it a movie, were it a trade paperback, were it all in one setting, the fact that it takes a quarter of the way through to really get to that first plot point wouldn't be a big deal. The fact it's a single installment and that's all I get is essentially what I already knew from the premise, that's the problem I've got. Not even the pacing, it's just the delivery mechanism, I guess. But it's fun, I'm looking forward to the rest of it. A heist or con job kind of a thing with has-been actors and whatnot in a comic convention. Seems like fun.
Yeah, it does.
So that's why I picked that one up. Did you read anything that was particularly exciting?
You know, Big Man Plans really stood out to me this week, written by Eric Powell and Tim Weish. And it's an image book, it's a four-issue miniseries, and it's about a dwarf who he goes through that childhood that I had mentioned earlier when we were talking about Hawkeye, very rough childhood. But it was well portrayed and well told that his early story ends up, matriculating to, a secret, soldier training thing a la Captain America a little bit, only mm-hmm. for the tunnels of Vietnam. And, has a couple of run-ins after the war. And it was a really good story so far. Really great introduction to this character. It's a mature theme title, so a lot of cursing, a lot of nudity in it. But besides that, it's a really well told tale, and I thought it was a good debut and something I'm glad I picked up. And it's one of those that I'll have to go grab issue two because I don't have it on pre-order.
That's cool. That's good to know. Is it just my imagination, or is there just a lot more cursing in a lot of books these days? I'm noticing a lot more profanity in various things.
Well, yeah, image books, for sure.
Even Marvel and DC. And I know I tend to be a little old-fashioned in this regard and tend not to be a huge fan of profanity and whatnot. And there are places where, yeah, it makes sense. It fits. It just seems to be getting sprinkled throughout as if profanity wasn't profanity. You know what I mean?
Well, it's almost like some of the creator-owned books are pushing the envelope so much. They're going well beyond just profanity, so much so that I think the other books that would not have even thought about inserting profanity are, I think the line has moved so far. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That if profanity seems more commonplace and a lot more tame, and you can drop an F-bomb in there. No, don't worry about it. Look what they're doing over on the cover of Saga, or over in this the Big Man Plans, or in the Humans over at Image. I mean, the stuff is very risque. But I mean, it's a mature title going in, so there's no surprises.
Yeah, I just have found, and I need to pay more attention. Is it more Marvel? Is it also happening some at DC? You know, where's it going on? It just seems like things as recently as 10 years ago would have been rare to see in terms of certain words or whatever are just showing up without a second thought. And again, Nothing right or wrong about it. I mean, to me, it's not a plus. It's not something where, oh, I'm going to drop the book or anything. No, it's just, it's something that I think limits the audience. It makes it inappropriate for younger readers. And certainly mature books, hey, that's a different ball game entirely. You know, I'm just thinking that in a lot of the mainstream stuff I'm reading, I'd like it to be something a little more accessible and more appropriate for younger readers. So I don't know, we can get more people reading comics, because I think that's good.
Yeah, you're going to alienate an entire generation if they're not careful, because parents aren't going to allow them to read them. No, you're not old enough to read comics yet. Wait till you're 18. and at some point, that might be too late.
Yeah. Hulk number 12 came out. Again, they're doing some interesting stuff there. I'm really starting to enjoy that book a lot. I'm curious what the big picture plan is going on there, but having fun with it.
Now, did Jerry Duggan do the whole 12-issue run so far after the Mark Waid volume?
After the Mark Waid stuff, which was the first four or five issues.
Okay, so you would suggest, because I didn't think the Mark Waid stuff was that good, you would suggest maybe just picking up the Duggan run? Or did you like all of it?
I liked all of it, and I think the Waid stuff, certainly the last issue, I think set up the Duggan stuff.
Okay.
There was a major event that happened to the Hulk. That was a game changer and spun the story in a very different direction. And all of this is coming out of that. And it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it now. Other people may not. But I also like, this is a book where it's using continuity well. Because not only does it play out of what happened by the previous creator, it's pulling in other Gamma characters from over the years. And some of them are you know, coming and then going. But it's at least acknowledging here's all this history the character has in a fun and move the story forward kind of a way. So, I'm liking it.
Yeah. Do you like Princess Leia?
Liked that. That was a lot of fun. We're going to review the second issue, so we'll talk more about that one there. But the art for the first issue I don't think was as strong as I had expected from the Dodsons. But overall, I thought it was a fun story.
Yeah.
Return to the Living Deadpool number 2. Still loving that. That is a solid A book for me, and it's just a fun take on zombies versus Deadpool, or Deadpool versus zombies. Take your pick.
I thought that the Spider-Woman number 5 was a lot better than the previous four.
I think they should have done the previous four as a Spider-Verse miniseries. And then claimed it was so successful they spun it off to an ongoing.
Yeah.
And maybe even renumber number one at this point.
Timing must have been off or something, or they just didn't think it through. Because, yeah, this felt so much more like a number one than the number one that we reviewed.
Yeah. Well, and it was her number one versus a part of Spider-Verse. Yeah. We get the new costume, we get a new look, a new direction or whatever for the character. It felt more first issue-ish than the first issue.
But they didn't benefit from having this as the first issue. I mean, there might be a sales bump because of the new character redesign. But I don't think it will be as significant as if they would have solicited this as a first issue with the new character design. Of it would have been a first issue, and it, you know, it would have had the full push of a launch. Whereas I'm sure that they've lost some readers. I would almost guarantee they've lost readers since issue one, and I don't think they came back for issue 5. We'll wait and see what the sales numbers look like, but I'm pretty sure they're not going to rebound.
They went from 93,723 on the first issue to around 44,618 on the second, and then 38,484 on the third. And I don't have the February numbers yet to know how number 4 did.
I would be surprised if 5 cracked 50, wouldn't you?
Well, given 2 and 3, I mean, 3 didn't even crack 40, yeah.
I mean, even with the fact that even though it's a new look.
Might get a bump. I hope it gets a bump. I think it would have had a better chance of hanging on to sales if it had been the first issue versus the first issue they had.
It's definitely not going to get 90,000.
Oh, no, not even. But I think if this had been the first issue, the second issue would not have lost half the sales. Well, hard to say. It depends, again, how many, you know, variant covers and stuff they did on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of it. Marvel first issues are just meaningless in terms of sales and tone, direction, style. I mean, it's sometimes you get enough of the story, you can judge if you want to get the next one or whatever. But if you were to predict how a title was going to do based solely on its first issue sales, I don't know if you could do that or not. It'd actually be fun to look into at some point.
Yeah. You reading Feathers?
I am not reading Feathers, no.
I haven't read the third issue. I just didn't know if you would.
You'd mentioned it before. I haven't been reading that one. Still enjoying, let's see, Grayson. We got a good issue of Green Arrow. Got the Doctor Who stuff. I thought the 11th Doctor had a really strong issue this time around. The fact that they've got, you know, three, almost four Doctors in play at one time is kind of fun.
Did you like the Guardians team-up that they did?
I thought it was okay. I gave it a kind of a B-. The art didn't really work entirely great for me. It wasn't bad. It just it felt a little...
It's old. It's old style. It's Art Adams, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It made the characters look younger than I felt they should have.
Mm-hmm.
There's an aspect of his art style that I think really works on certain characters more so than others, but it reminds me also of, oh, I'm forgetting the artist's name. He did Wild Guard. He's done Scott Nock. There's an aspect of their penciling style that's similar to each other. It's really good. I like it. But I like it better on some characters than others, and there was something about the way these Avengers were portrayed and the Guardians where I thought the writing just wasn't... It felt more like they were going for the movie audience than the comic audience.
Yeah, yeah, I got that sense, too. I lost interest in the story, but I thought the art was interesting. And, you know, it had a nostalgic feel to it, and it felt like it belonged on a newsprint paper. You know,
mm-hmm.
and not on today's glossy paper. It needs to be on a lower stock paper, just I think to match. And I thought that was kind of just it was just interesting to look
at. It's great art, don't get me wrong, but there was an aspect of it where it felt out of step with what's current.
It
not
yeah definitely feels
way.
Like of a time.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, you put some of these characters on. You put Art Adams on like Longshot. You put Scott Nock on Nightcrawler or some of the other stuff recently. And it can really work. But there was something about this book where it didn't totally work for me. It was good. Like I said, I liked it. I just didn't love it. I don't think this book has legs or longevity. I think Guardians Team Up, if it gets to a seventh issue, I'll be a little surprised. Now, part of that's also, all ongoing regular books seem to be at Marvel and DC having a short lifespan these days with Secret Wars and Convergence coming up.
Yeah, I don't know what that's going to do with the timetables in some of these books.
It'll
be interesting to find how that goes. I thought the new saga was really good, issue 26, and a lot of stuff happening, going in a lot of different directions, but I thought it was handled well in the book, and it feels like a new, fresh start to this story that we've spent 25, 26 issues on, and it feels like it go in a bunch of different directions. I think it worked really well.
I would agree with that. I think they've really paced themselves well for the long haul. Do an arc, take a break, do an arc, take a break, do an arc, you know, whatever. It's showing no signs of really slowing down creatively.
No, I think, what is that? It's 10 issues a year, and they sell 60,000 copies an issue or so. I don't know if it's that quite that high, but if you only have to split it with a couple of people, and I think he just has Fiona and maybe a letter, can't remember. So I would think that that's plenty and very sustainable, and they can do that as long as they want to tell the story.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. The sales are so strong with that, they're going until they're done.
Yeah, kind of a light week for me other than that, though.
It was a decent size week. It wasn't huge for me. It was about 4 dozen comics. It's lighter than some of the more recent weeks. So it was fun. I've still got one or two left to read. I still haven't read Parallel Man or the second issue of Stray. I read the first. I did like it, so good recommendation on that. That was already
cool.
On my order form, so I knew it was coming. Speaking of stuff that's coming, the next round of solicits should be starting to show up online soon. As you know, this week, next week, as this issue, this episode goes up, had a great turnout again for this last preview spotlight. Drew, you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, the last episode was really good. Had a lot of new voices, and I thought it was really strong.
No, I love hearing from different people and getting different tastes and stuff on there. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, so another good turnout, and that'll be going up this week?
Yes. It'll go up before this episode, but we're recording on Tuesday nights. It goes up on Wednesday, so tomorrow as we record, last Wednesday as they listen. Or... ages ago, as this is memorialized in the Internet Archive for centuries to come. Scary thought right there.
So online solicits are out anytime now, right?
Yeah, should be anytime now, and that'll be the stuff, I believe, released in June and stuff. So we should start getting the actual solicits for the post-convergence stuff, more of what's happening in the Secret Wars stuff going on. I think we'll even get the new Archie number one. because I think Archie 666, the final issue of that, was in the current previews. So a lot of fun stuff going on.
Oh, that'd be good. That's the Fiona Staples art on that. That'd be great.
Yeah, the Mark Waid Fiona Staples. I'm real curious about that one. I really think Archie is making a push to become relevant and stuff, and I think they're pulling it off.
Yeah.
Whether they can maintain is the question. Hopefully they can.
Now, the actual previews catalog comes out on the 25th. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And that makes what's the due date then? It'll be April...
April 4th.
Oh, April 4th you'll want to?
Yeah, the 25th. It's usually the not that Saturday, but the one after it.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
But the 25th of March is both when previews comes out. It's also when the DCBS orders are due. If you've got a local shop, they usually want it by the 18th, I think. I could be wrong on that. Check with your local shop. And if they are disinterested in your pre-orders, well, that's their choice. But I think they're missing a opportunity to tune how they order their comics. But yeah, the deadline is the 4th of April. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Nope, that'll do it.
Cool.
Join us next week as we discuss Detective Comics Endgame number 1 from DC, Howard the Duck number 1 from Marvel, and Bill and Ted's Most Triumphant Return number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.